WGN Radio. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. This is John Williams. On Wednesdays, Terry Savage, the nationally syndicated financial columnist and author of The Savage Truth on Money. Hi again, Terry. I hope you're well.
I am well. Did I hear you tease Bitcoin?
Well, yes, a little bit. Because to me, you... Well, I won't finish that sentence.
You don't think I'd know anything about Bitcoin?
No, I didn't think
and,
that.
No,
I didn't think that you would think that we should be involved in Bitcoin, and so therefore you weren't going to give us any tips or strategies or thoughts about them.
The truth is, I'm not giving you tips or tips for sure. But I first started talking about Bitcoin and going to Bitcoin conferences a year and a half ago. Now, I want to give you some full disclosure up front. I do not own Bitcoin. I have not owned Bitcoin. I have owned and do own a Bitcoin mining company or a cryptocurrency mining company. And full disclosure, I sit on the board of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, CME Group, which, as you know, started trading Bitcoin futures 2 years ago, now has a mini Bitcoin and Ethereum contracts. So we trade digital currencies. But I thought, because now Bitcoin has frothed itself to the surface again, that it would be wrong not to explain how the blockchain works, why it exists, what Bitcoin and Ethereum and even this crazy Dogecoin might play either in your finances or in avoiding them to keep you from losing money. So my new column up at terrysavage.com is called Bitcoin Basics.
Okay, so I have a minute and a half here before our first break, and then we'll have more time for you to do all of that and start taking calls at 312-981-7200. Having said that, where do we start, Terry? What do you want to say about
cryptocurrencies? I'll give you 1 minute on Bitcoin. First of all, forget the coin for a moment and understand that the technology called blockchain ledger will revolutionize all aspects of finance. There's no doubt about it. It's a digital way of tracking all transactions that's immutable. In most cases, private and anonymous, unless someone creates a ledger that's public, and which avoids all kinds of hassles. The way I think about it is, you know, you buy a home, you pay for a title insurance policy to make sure that no one back there had a lien against your home and the property is what it is. If we had Bitcoin, blockchain ledger for title insurance, then we would never need title insurance at all, and the title insurance companies would fade away because these would be written immutably. On the blockchain ledger, this is the property. There are no liens against it. This is the, you know, coordinates of it. So the ledger itself is the backbone of all future financial transactions globally. No doubt about that. And on that ledger hang some currencies, which we can talk about when you come back because I just used my minute.
Syndicated financial columnist Terry Savage is on a phone line. She's talking to us about cryptocurrencies. Terry, I just want to ask you one question as you move along here. I don't know if I should be thinking of Bitcoin or Dogecoin, these cryptocurrencies, as currencies, as ways to buy and, you know, sell things as a currency, or if I should be thinking of it as an investment. I mostly just think I should buy some and watch the value go up.
Exactly. I think at this moment you should think of it as a speculation. And in fact, only in one country in the world as of today, El Salvador, is it a legal currency? That just happened today.
Oh.
Look, I'm going to give you some numbers just to put things in perspective for people if you think you're out of this. This is a survey that came out of the Ascent, a Motley Fool service. You can find it at Motley Fool. 14% of American adults, roughly 21 million people, own cryptocurrencies. Over half of Americans who own cryptocurrencies bought for the first time within the last 12 months. And 22% of Americans that have never purchased cryptocurrency, that's you, say they are likely to buy it in the next year. And most of them say they have no idea, that don't own it, of what it is, how it works,
exactly,
where you would buy it and so forth, which is why I decided to write this basics, Bitcoin basics column up there.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, whether you use it as a speculation, and boy, has it been a speculation. 2 days ago, the price of Bitcoin was $32,000. It's up over $36,000. A year and a half ago, it was under $1,000. The high was in April, $64,829, so about $65,000. So what you see going on in the prices of Bitcoin and other of these cryptocurrencies in terms of price currently is a total speculation. It's not an investment. It is, unless you consider it an investment in your own entertainment and getting your heart beat up. I think this is a perfect substitute for, you know, walking on a treadmill. You can get your heart rate up. But the point is, everybody's talking about it. So this is Bitcoin is only like 10, 11 years old. And I won't bother you with the history of how it's created, but basically you've heard words like mining. Mm-hmm. What it is a very intensive use of computer cyber technology. Bitcoins are limited, by the way, at 21 million. That's all that will ever be created based on this cyber formula. So there's a limited amount of them eventually. And right now it takes so much energy for these computers to mine another Bitcoin that there's some concern about the impact on energy, and Elon Musk has talked about that.
Yeah.
But if you want, I also thought maybe we should. So the value is what anyone thinks it is that day. The long-term value, some would say, well, there's only 21 million Bitcoin that can ever be created. And look at the United States. Treasury is printing money by the bushel basket, by the billions every month. So maybe it would be a store of value. The dollar has been the world's official store of value since World War II. But before that, it was the British pound. Before that, you know, and the dollar used to be linked to gold. Right now, the dollar is the world's trading mechanism based on the full faith and credit of the American government. Think about that for a moment, and you will see why maybe the world is searching for alternatives. Gold, but not really booming. But maybe there are some who think Bitcoin, over the long run, could be a store of value. Some people want it for privacy. But look, they just found out they were able to track down the Bitcoin that were paid as
ransom
pipeline. Yeah. So maybe, you know, maybe it's not so cute. China banned Bitcoin, but has created its own digital currency. And now it can track where all of its citizens spend money and where they go and everything they do. So whether it's really secret is who knows. And the U.S. government is working on a digital dollar. So this is something you need to know about. You don't need to speculate on, but if you want to buy it, I just want to make this point.
All right, somebody said, where do I buy it? If I do want to buy it.
Exactly. So that's why I put this in the column.
And where do I go? Bitcoin.com? What do I do?
No. There are exchanges. The biggest one is Coinbase. It went public, and the stock soared. There's one in Chicago called Kraken, Kraken. It's right here in Chicago. Go to Kraken.com. The problem is there are several thousand cryptocurrencies, although you've only heard of Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Dogecoin. There are thousands of them. There are thousands of places where you could, quote, go to buy one of these currencies, but in some cases it's a total scam and you're putting your U.S. money into a black hole and it'll never come out. So let me tell you that if you want to buy it, you go to either Coinbase.com or Kraken, Kraken.com. A Chicago, they're the oldest, actually. This Chicago company, Kraken, is the most globally diverse coin exchange. And that's how you do it. You can wire money in or give them a check or in some cases use your credit card to buy a cryptocurrency. But number one, I don't think you're going to be using it for much, although some merchants are accepting payment in Bitcoin.
Right, yeah.
Okay, but that's not widespread yet. I don't think it's going to keep secret from prying eyes. The U.S. government hasn't decided, the SEC, how they're going to deal with the transactions or the taxes on the transactions. Nonetheless, you need to understand that digital currency is a wave of the future based on blockchain technology. And don't laugh about it. Don't go crazy. Don't speculate. If you want to spend a little money and then you'll start looking at what the price is every day, be my guest, but this is not a significant part of your investment portfolio. There you go.
312-981-7200. Terry Savage is on the line. I have more questions about that, but let's start picking up some phone calls and see what else is on your mind. George, you're on the air. What can we do for you today?
Hi, John and Terry. I've just got a question about, there's an ad in the Tribune about a CD, 6-month FDIC insured out of Sun City, Arizona. Sun City Financial Group is the organization, and they're paying 3.20. And I'm wondering, I'm sorry about this, but is it too good to be true?
Yeah, I think it's too good to be true. I can't imagine what the caveats are on there, but I promise you there is. There's either, I don't know any place where you can get 3% on a six-month FDIC.
Okay.
I mean, I just do me a favor. My email is terry@terrysavage.com. Either take a freeze frame of that ad or scan it or and attach it or send me a link to it. I guarantee you there either you have to keep your money there after that CD expires for another 4 years at a 0.5% or something like that.
There's all right, well, that clears a lot up to me because it's like if it's too good to be true, it probably is.
Yeah, exactly.
We will do you that favor. I'm going to make sure you see that, Terry, and maybe you'll have more wisdom on that next week. But I take the caution that you're giving this guy. That does sound weird. Nobody's paying 3.2% these days.
Nope, not for 6 months. Not unless they've got you locked up in some other way for at least 8 to 10 years, I would bet.
312-981-7200. You can call or text. This person texted, John, I know you touched on this, but I got confirmation of IRS receiving my tax return April 3rd. Direct deposit info provided. Website shows my return is still in process. Do I need to go to an actual branch of the IRS to find out what's...
No. No, you can't go there. You can't talk to them. You cannot talk to them. In fact, I got a call last week, and it said, this is, I won't mention the name, from the IRS Criminal Investigations Division. And I said, oh, my goodness, how wonderful. I've been waiting for you to call me. I'm the only one that greets the IRS with a call personal call thing.
Yeah.
Oh, I've been dying to talk to you. I'm working on a big thing about ex-spouses who steal stimulus checks.
Yeah.
So that's my next project. But the you can't go visit the IRS. It is not surprising that your return is still in process. They will get to it. Your refund, I have people telling me they filed in February and March. Think what the IRS is doing besides processing your tax return. They're dealing with two rounds of the January and then the April stimulus checks that were mailed out. They're dealing with the new child tax credit where they'll start mailing them out in July.
Mm-hmm.
They're dealing with, and they've started sending out refunds for people who paid income taxes on the first $10,200 of unemployment.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that.
So they're getting, those are starting to come back to you. And they're busy. So they'll get to it. As I say every week, I have great confidence in the organizational skills of the IRS.
Yeah, boy, if they don't have that, they got nothing. It's 1228. That's Terry Savage. One more segment with Terry after the news. So still time for you to get in. 312-981-7200 WGN. John Williams here. One more segment with Terry Savage. Lots of calls, lots of texts. Let's see how much ground we can plow here. Okay, Terry?
Yeah.
What does Terry think about seniors deferring property taxes, about $5,000 a year, with it due on the death or sale of the property?
I think that whatever makes it possible legally to stay in your home is fine. This is your life. I mean, we all would like to leave something to our children or grandchildren, but if you want to stay in your home and if that kind of a proposal comes up and makes sense, depending on where you live, why not? By the way, if we do have inflation, which I think is likely, and let's say you deferred $5,000 in 10 years or 15 years or 25 years when you die, it'll be a lot easier to repay that $5,000 because of inflation.
I didn't know you could do that, defer property
taxes. I didn't know
taxes.
You can, but I understand that that's been a proposal in some places.
Can Terry elaborate on why not to retire before full retirement age? I hate my job, says 815.
Oh, I don't say that you have to be listen, I think we've all learned a lesson about how precious life is. So I would never tell you not to retire if you hate your job. The things I would tell you, and you remember I wrote that book, The Savage Number, How Much Money Do You Really Need to Retire? What I would tell you is to figure out before you jump ship how you're going to bring in enough income to maintain your lifestyle and definitely not take Social Security before full retirement age and potentially postpone it as long as you can, because taking Social Security early is like is an 8% cut in benefits per year for the years that you take it early, and it lowers the base on which future inflation adjustments will be made. So, yeah, I don't want anybody to be stuck doing stuff they hate. By the way, we had a jobs report today that said there are millions and millions of jobs, maybe not the ones you want, going unfilled. So this would be a perfect time if you have 4 or 5 or 6 more years to go before you reach Social Security full retirement age, call it 67, to look around for something that you'd rather do. It might be a job. It might be a business you start.
Mm-hmm.
But never be tied with a ball and chain waiting for the day when you'll be free because you're missing some good days in between.
So we had a guy call a minute ago and said he saw an ad in the paper. It says 3.2% on a six-month CD. Is that too good to be true? And one of our other listeners called that number. Hey, Jim, you're on WGN.
Yeah, hi, John and Terry.
What happened?
Well, first, that's not a new ad. They've been running that for at least 2 years, and it's generally in the business section of the Sunday papers. And I've noticed it because I have ample funds sitting in the bank earning almost nothing. So I did call them, and stopped there. They have an office in Roselle, just off of the tollway. And
what'd they say? Is it 3.2% for 6 months?
What it is the bank, they work with banks. They act as a broker, and that's how they explained why they can offer this six-month interest. And what it is they're trying to push another product, and he really was getting into it, and I was not interested. Yeah, I'm of retirement age, and I was really interested.
They wanted you to invest in something else or put your money in something else to get that six-month 3.2?
No, this was a totally different product. It was
annuity,
kind of like an annuity.
Yeah.
With
Terry.
Yeah, that's a look, folks. There is no free lunch. I figured it was a come on for an annuity pitch, but I wasn't going to take a wild guess. There is no 3% in a CD. And there are services, by the way, that are very legitimate. One is maxmyinterest.com. where they move your money in your own accounts among internet-based banks that are very legitimate and FDIC insured, and you might get an extra 0.5% by doing that. I've written about maxmyinterest.com. Search the columns at terrysavage.com. But this three, I told you there was a catch. Either they were going to lock your money up. This is a pitch for an annuity. I hate it when they do things like this to people. Chicken money is money you cannot afford to lose. Not so concerned about the return on your money as the return of your money. If you have money you can't afford to lose, leave that in the bank. Yell at Jay Powell, rates are going to go up, and you'll be glad you didn't tie it up in some crazy product like this.
Jim, thanks for the phone call. I'm going to go from you.
Thank you, yeah.
Janice, you're on WGN. What can we do for you, Janice?
I just think Terry answered my question. What do you think about annuities?
Oh, no, I have nothing against annuities. Wait. In fact, there's a new interview on my website at terrysavage.com, and I haven't even listened to the whole thing, but I did it with Stan the Annuity Man. He had me on his podcast, and I said, yeah, I'm going to post that on mine. I have nothing against annuities. I own a couple, but you need to know what you're buying, what the product is, and who you're buying from. I wanted to make a quick dividing line. When you go into retirement, you know, you're going to get a Social Security check, I hope, every month for life. And every year you'll get an inflation adjustment. I'm going to presume inflation is coming, given all the money they're printing globally. So you'll get an inflation adjustment. An annuity with a portion of your money that guarantees you a check a month for life as long as you live, and you might live to be a lot older than you think, would be something that would be very reassuring. However, that check is fixed. And at only 3% inflation, the buying power of a fixed monthly check is cut in half in 25 years. So when you're retiring, you might consider some of your money in an annuity that starts immediately, or some that protects you against living really long. You give them the money now and say, but don't start my checks till I'm 80. Then you get a nice big check for the rest of your life after that. And then for those who are investing and just looking for a place for tax-deferred growth of your money, there are some good reasons to invest in some annuities. But just don't be swayed by the promises that, quote, you get all the upside of the stock market and none of the downside, because you never get all the upside. And when it comes time to take it out, you basically get only the interest rate they've guaranteed. So it's a big, long topic. I have nothing against annuities, but be smart. Read some of the columns up at terrysavage.com.
Got about 45 seconds, Janice. I hope that helped, and maybe we can help Jim here before we get done.
Okay.
Jim, you're on WGN. What was your question, sir?
I have a question about, I think you've answered it, though. I'm 69 years old, a year away. I've deferred my Social Security, I want to, until 70. I just need some words around why it makes sense to keep on the track that I'm going and wait until 70 to collect my Social Security number, Social Security.
Because you'll get an extra 8% in your check till you, if you wait till after your 70th birthday. And on that higher base check, you'll get future cost of living adjustments. You are a model for what everybody should be doing. Use some of your savings and wait for Social Security, because that starting date fixes your base check and then on the future of inflation adjustments. Good for you. Don't you dare take your Social Security until after your 70th birthday.
Especially if you're 69 now. The finish line is right there, dude. But
that's a good birthday present.
And we've got your phone number, so if you do, I'm going to give it to Terry, and she's going to call you and yell at you. TerrySavage.com. That's where you get more information like this, and she joins us on Wednesdays. Thank you, Terry. We'll visit next week.
John, thank you always for having me.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Boeing says it's going to cost more to build the next generation presidential aircraft. The company says it also needs more time to deliver the new Air Force One because of difficulties with COVID-19 and a subcontractor. Boeing received a $3.9 billion contract in July of 2018 to build two 747-8 aircraft for use as Air Force One, with delivery by December 2024. And now the company says it needs another year. The company has also sent the Air Force a letter beginning the process of negotiating a price adjustment for the jets. In April, Boeing recorded a $318 million pre-tax charge related to presidential aircraft because of a dispute with that supplier. New funding for a Chicago startup that wants to help consumers track their sleep data. Rise Science says it raised $10 million in a Series A round. It previously raised $5.5 million in a seed round. Rise Science initially launched to help improve the sleep of professional and college athletes. Chicago Inno reports the new funding brings the company's total raise to $15 million. Rise Science created a mobile app that tracks sleep data through wearable devices like Apple Watches and Fitbits. It also uses movement data stored by iPhones and Androids. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
We've got the business of food, too, and here's Steve Alexander.
Yes, sir. Let's talk about lunch. For most of working America, lunch is a break. Yeah, maybe half hour, maybe an hour, maybe at a restaurant, maybe with colleagues or friends. But for the people who raise our food, lunch and even dinner are quite often served in the field. And there's actually a name for those meals.
My husband asked if I would help with field meals, and I was like, sure, but what's a field meal?
That's Deanne Frieders, who was raised in a farming community, but not on a farm, and she had no plans to marry a farmer.
When I met my husband, my parents were like, you know he's a farmer, right?
But she has embraced the farm life and is part of a family farming operation near Waterman in DeKalb County. And along with cooking the field meals, she delivers.
And we would. We'd just kind of like spread a outdoor blanket on the ground or pop open the tailgate and have, you know, 15, 20-minute break. And I think for farm families, that's so important.
Deanne also started writing about field meals on Facebook, and the response was so good that she started a blog where she shares recipes.
I'm at thisfarmgirlcooks.com.
These are recipes that are tested to be field meal ready.
Yeah, the most important thing for field meals, it's got to be something that could be ready right away or hold for a couple hours, because schedules are always changing on the farm.
And she has a no knife required rule.
I've learned not to serve pork chops unless it's on a sandwich out in the field.
You never know what's going to hit on the internet, but thisfarmgirlcooks.com is getting quite the audience.
I've got followers from coast to coast, basically, though I'd say the core is like the Midwest. We've got a lot of canola farmers that are following in Canada. And then I'd say my second two biggest followings are in the UK and Australia.
Now the recipe blog again is thisfarmgirlcooks.com. And you can also find Deanne on Twitter, where her handle is @IFeedFarmers. Well, the weather market continues at the Chicago Board of Trade. Beans today are down about 14 cents. There's some profit taking going on there, too, after some beneficial rains hit the soybean belt, corn belt as well. Corn is actually trading higher today, 14 cents now. Wheat is down about 3.25 cents. Today is National Strawberry Rhubarb Pie Day. You can leave out that rhubarb for me, please. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Jessica Gabe's on a phone line, the communications manager for the Chicago Loop Alliance. LoopChicago.com is the website for really interesting information about how we are emerging from the pandemic. Jessica, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you so much for having me.
What numbers are you all seeing? I know that you monitor occupancy at hotels, even things like pedestrian traffic, right?
Yeah, so we've had pedestrian counters on State Street since, I believe, 2013, but the information has obviously become much more interesting to more people in the past year. And our May report shows that pedestrian activity in the loop is about 45% of normal. It's gradually, you know, moving in the right direction, so that's great to see.
Pedestrian counters, are those machines or people?
They're machines. They're sort of attached to the tops of buildings. Pretty cool stuff.
So 45% of normal. What I wonder how low it was, say, a year ago.
Yeah, so right at the stay-at-home order last March, it was less than 20% of normal. So it got a little bit better last summer, and we're on the right track again, thankfully.
So you're 2.5 times better than it was, but you're still 55% below where it would be without a pandemic hanging over us. What is the return level to businesses downtown? Do you have a number on that?
Yeah, so as far as office workers go, right now we're still seeing maybe a little over 20% of normal levels of people in offices. Which is obviously still quite low, but it's the highest that it's been since the start of the pandemic, so that's a good sign. We're also hearing from big companies like Citadel, JP Morgan Chase, BMO Harris, that they're sending combined about 10,000 workers back to offices in June and July, so we expect those numbers to go up pretty dramatically over the next couple of months.
Wow, I want you to reiterate that. Those banks are sending back in offices as many as 10,000 people back into the downtown area this month and next?
Yes, by July. And there's it's a little up in the air as to whether, you know, is everyone going to be in the office 5 days a week? Is it going to be a few days on, a few days off? There will definitely be more flexibility moving forward than what we saw before the pandemic. But the number of people who are downtown, you can just walk the sidewalks and see there's activity, the weather's beautiful, people are vaccinated and continuing to get vaccinated. It's really uplifting to be downtown after such a hard year.
I've been downtown every day of the pandemic. I haven't worked from home once. So I think I have a pretty good...
Do you see it? Do you notice?
I do. But I also notice this, and I think that number is still sobering. 20% is as good as it is for people back in the offices. So you do see more people on the streets, but in those buildings, we are still 80% less occupied than we were a year and a half ago, right?
Yeah. The office metric has been the slowest to recover. All the other numbers we're seeing, hotel occupancy, like I said, pedestrian activity, CTA ridership, parking volumes, all of those metrics are improving more quickly. But again, I think from what we're hearing, even beyond those three companies I mentioned, anecdotally, is businesses are sort of getting their plans together to ask their workers to come back this summer. So we're guessing that by July, that number might hit 50%. We're hopeful for that.
What are you seeing about hotel occupancy?
So that data is always a month behind. So all we have is for the month of April. But at that point, it was about 40% of normal. And that's been trending upward every month this year. And I'm also hearing, again, anecdotally from folks I know who work in hotels, that they're hiring staff back. The Hilton is opening, I believe, tomorrow. The Palmer House is opening next week. Over Memorial Day weekend, I had a friend who said people were calling angry because they couldn't get a room.
Hooray. Hooray. Mm-hmm. And that Pretty House, just a Pretty Hotel in the Carbine building just opened, too. So I was really encouraged to see a new hotel open up downtown.
Absolutely. And speaking of new things, there are two large residential developments that have opened this spring and summer on around Lake and Wabash. So we're also hearing that the residential market is really picking up, and all the sort of fears around no one's going to want to live downtown ever again, that has not turned out to be the case.
Really interesting data. I'm glad we found you today, Jessica, and let's talk again and continue to monitor this. It's loopchicago.com, the Chicago Loop Alliance. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks so much.